The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. Case 15 from the Book of Serenity. Guishan asked Yangshan, "Where have you just come from?" Yangshan said, "From the field." Guishan said, "How many people are in the field?" Yangshan stuck his hoe in the ground, clasped his hands, and stood there. Guishan said, "On South Mountain, there are a lot of people cutting reeds." Yangshan pulled his hoe from the ground and walked away. So yesterday, we explored this koan, and Alan's talk really thoroughly explicated it, as far as I'm concerned. And yet here we are again. Maybe there's no such thing as thoroughly explicating. In sitting with this koan and sitting with all of you in this sesshin, I'm so amazed by the continuing revelation of hidden depths. We think maybe that we have achieved something. We may have a little opening experience of some kind, or maybe an insight, simply a revelation about something to do with who we are as human beings, how we function in the world, how life unfolds for us. And maybe the insight gets stronger or wider or deeper, and it begins to apply to many other things. As we all know, in Zen practice, we talk about enlightenment or awakening. And in the Boundless Way Zen School, we don't emphasize that as much as it was emphasized by my first teacher, for sure, who came from a different lineage tradition. All of the many ways of practicing Zen emphasize different parts of this great practice, but all of them are guidances, guidelines, ways of practicing in order to have something revealed about the actual nature of reality, something that's been hidden from us by the culture that we grow up in, by the conventional way of seeing the world and ourselves. These revelatory moments are sometimes called moments of awakening or enlightenment. And in studying koans and hearing about them in Dharma talks, we realize, if we listen carefully, that everyone who experiences such a thing experiences it quite differently. There's a uniqueness to the experience because there is a uniqueness to how we develop as human beings. I wanted to look into, for myself, a little history of these two characters, Guishan and Yangshan, particularly concerning their awakening experiences, which were quite different from each other. Although when Guishan was established as a teacher on Mount Gui with hundreds of disciples, and Yangshan came along having already ordained and studied with other teachers, as Alan pointed out yesterday, they recognized each other. I don't know if he actually pointed it out, but that's what I remember him saying. They recognized each other. And in this story, all the stories of Guishan as a student and as a teacher, and Yangshan as a student and as a teacher, there's some kind of recognition that keeps popping up. In this koan, their teacher and student, and also they're playing together around various forms of emptiness and awakened activity. Planting the hoe in the ground, just this, nothing but this. But then there are all those people in the fields. There are all those people all over the world, as Shishin Wick comments in his reflections on this koan, people suffering everywhere, people going about their business, people who need us to do this work of looking deeply into the true nature of the self. And so Yangshan, without much fuss, picks up his hoe and moves on, moves off into whatever comes next. That is what Zen is about, not just sitting in stillness and practicing with our own personal practice. It's also doing this in order to serve other human beings. It's doing it to serve the suffering in the world. We can't shut ourselves off from these things, although we do try, some of us, because the pain of really opening to suffering can become unbearable. When we were chanting the personal dedications earlier, and Ray, our Eno, was naming all the people who are suffering, whose spirits feel crushed, people at war, you know that there are people, countless beings, who don't have the great good karma, although we don't like to speak of good karma, there's just karma. They don't have the karma to be here in this room right now. We do. And so what's our responsibility? All of the causes and conditions of our lives have led us here. And there is a responsibility because of that. No matter how much we may look at our lives and say, oh, it's so hard. I mean, I could give you my own personal litany, and I'm sure every single person in this room could come up with the list of how hard it is. Maybe some of you could also interject how wonderful it is, how amazing it is. All dharmas, innately amazing, as Hongzhi tells us. Hongzhi, who was the collector of the Book of Serenity, and who wrote a poem for every one of these koans, of these 100 koans, this being the 15th. Hongzhi, who we recited one of his poems today in our sutra service. The beauty of his words belies the kind of intense struggle that we all experience when we really sit down to open our hearts to the world that's suffering and also direct our attention and awareness inward to our own minds, our own emotional field, and our own bodies. And no matter what's happening, we have our practices, and then we get lost, and then we realize that we're lost. Such an important thing. If we don't realize we're lost, we begin to believe all the stories we've created that keep us imprisoned, for some of us, in very hellish places. The limitations of those narratives begins to bind us. And for some of us in the world, not everyone, for some of us, we say, I need to see a different way to live. I don't believe that this is the way to live. There must be something else. And we begin to seek. We begin to seek guidance from many places, books and teachers and so many poems and lectures, and the internet is full of this kind of guidance. And then every once in a while, and some teachers said that it's a little bit like a great turtle swimming in the ocean and suddenly finds his head poking up through a circle of wood. It's as rare as that. We find people, a community, we find teachers, we find a way that we can really practice with great sincerity. Guishan searched, Yangshan searched, and found. Philip Kaplow dedicates his book, The Three Pillars of Zen, not to those who seek, but to those who find. And there's some truth in this. Once we find it, once we align with it, we may leave, as Hakuin says in his Song of Zazen, that doesn't matter. Those who hear this truth even once and listen with a grateful heart, no matter where we go for the rest of our lives, that little spark has touched our hearts, and it will affect the rest of our lives in ways we can never even know. So there's a story about Guishan when he was a student that I just love. And when I was researching this, I rediscovered it. It's been important to me ever since I first heard it, more than 40 years ago when I first started sitting Zazen with a teacher who I stayed with for 20 years, left for various reasons, and then found my next teacher, James Ford, who eventually gave me Dharma transmission. The connections that I felt with what these people said went so deep, but I entered the way through the path, through the door of despair, of frustration, of not really being able to value what I brought to the world. And so I heard this story from my first teacher, and I'm going to read you Andy Ferguson's translation of it, or at least part of it. I'll probably change a little bit as I go along. As we know from hearing yesterday, Guishan was the student of Baijiang. Baijiang, the great master who had many Dharma heirs, and Guishan was one of them. For a while, Guishan stayed and studied with his teacher, and then he went on to found a monastery, or actually become the head teacher of a monastery on Mount Gui, which is where he got his name, Guishan, Gui Mountain. And the story is, once while Guishan was attending Baijiang, that is, he was Baijiang's jisha, he was his attendant, and the tradition of jisha, which we see enacted at this session by Anne, and many of you have been in the role of jisha, is to attend to the teacher, but it also can be an opportunity to get close to the teacher, to have, in our old style, we gave Jishas more doksans than everybody else. And then we decided, well, maybe we won't do that anymore. But there's a kind of intimacy that develops between people who are working together. And you may have already noticed it at this session. The people in the kitchen, the people doing samu next to you, people sitting next to you. An intimacy that's really beyond words. So Guishan came in to Baijiang, and Baijiang said, "Who's there?" And Guishan said, "Me." That's nice. Not too metaphoric yet, not too complicated. Here I am, just this, me. Who's there? Me. And then Baijiang said to him, "Stick a poker in the fire and see if there's any fire left in it." And so Guishan did that, and he said, "Nope, no fire left." And then Baijiang took the poker himself, and sticking it deep into the stove, pulled out some hot embers, and showing them to Guishan, he said, "You said there was no fire left, but what about this?" Upon hearing these words, Guishan experienced great enlightenment. He then bowed and made his realization known to Baijiang. I'm going to just pause there in the story, because for me, the feeling of the stove being full of ashes is very strong. The feeling that the world is really in bad shape and there's nothing I can do, or I'm in really bad shape and there's nothing I can do. All ashes, nothing there. All this beautiful talk about the amazing nature of the Dharma, not available to me. Just ashes. And here's where we see, and I think this is why I love this story so much, the true purpose of a teacher, which is not to tell people what to do, not even to give advice or anything as direct as that, but to show that the fire still has embers in it. Even the most despairing places are alive with the possibility of fire. Teachers are pointing out people. We point things out. We say, what you are experiencing is the Buddha nature itself. It isn't somewhere else. It isn't not being sad anymore, or not being lonely anymore, not being angry anymore, not being judgmental anymore. It is, in fact, deep within those things themselves. And what we need is an astute eye to see that the Buddha nature arises as everything with no exception. How many times have I said this? How many times have you heard it? But how many times has it gone in? For Guishan, in this story, in this moment, it went right in. Within the ashes, an ember. And then what happens next, I find so interesting. Baijiang, instead of approving him and saying, yeah, you had a great awakening, that's great. Now, you know, let me tell you all the secrets and mysteries of Zen. Instead, he says this. He said, what you experienced is a temporary fork in the road. I really like that imagery, a temporary fork in the road. Now you get to choose to walk down the road, he might have said. And later, when Guishan and Yangshan created the Guiyang school, which they never called it like that, just like the Buddha never called what he did Buddhism. But later people said, because of what they did together, how they enlivened Zen in their time. There were a lot of controversies about sudden awakening and gradual cultivation, and which is better. And in the Guiyang school, there was none of that. There was both. There was cultivation and awakening. And it didn't matter when the awakening happened, but the cultivation happened from the very beginning of practice all the way to the final breath. No end. Teachers are working just as hard to look into the true heart of the matter as everybody else. An ongoing cultivation of those embers in the stove. And then Baijiang says a little bit more, actually a lot more, but I'll just excerpt some of it. When Buddha nature expresses itself, it's like delusion suddenly turning into enlightenment, like remembering something that was forgotten, like remembering something that was forgotten, and realizing that the self and other things do not come from someplace else. Remembering something that's been forgotten, not having words for it, not needing words for it, but just feeling that kindling of something unnameable. There's a famous story about Guishan that happens after this. When someone comes to Baijiang's temple and says, there's a big monastery on the top of Mount Gui, and we need a teacher for it. And Baijiang says, oh, are you asking me to be the teacher on Mount Gui? And the fellow who comes, who's a hermit, a traveling wanderer, a practitioner of the way, says, no, not for you, Baijiang. I want to examine your students. I want to see if maybe one of them has what it takes. And of course, there's a head monk, and there's Guishan. Guishan, who at that point has become the cook, the tenzo, in Baijiang's monastery. And both the head monk and Guishan are called to be examined. And Baijiang comes up with a question. He sets out a water pitcher. And he says, without saying it's a water pitcher, what is it? And the head monk says, you can't call it a wooden stool. And Baijiang then asks Guishan the same question. And he kicks over the water pitcher and walks out. Beautiful reflection, Yangshan later putting the hoe on his shoulder and walking out. What more is there to do? What more is there to say? Complete. And Baijiang laughs when this happens and he says, the head monk loses. And Guishan becomes the head of the monastery at Mount Gui, already established but needing a teacher. And that's where Yangshan comes and meets him. That instant recognition. Baijiang had many students. He recognized many people as his Dharma heirs. And Guishan was just one of them, but an important one. And Guishan also had many Dharma heirs, not just Yangshan. Yangshan was about 40 or 50 years younger than him when he arrived at the temple, at the monastery on Mount Gui. And when they met, he knew immediately, according to this translation, Guishan knew immediately that Yangshan was something extraordinary. I love that word, extraordinary. It's a feeling, it expresses a feeling that I have when I meet all of you. It's extraordinary that you would choose to practice this way, to find out for yourself. No intermediaries. Teachers are not intermediaries. For finding out for yourself, as Wu Men says, whether water is hot or cold. This is only valuable information if it touches you deep, deep in your heart mind. And you know it immediately. The first impression. We're called to be together. We recognize each other. How does that happen? Sometimes, in fact, most of the time, I feel like it's just me who recognizes you. But after a while, the recognition takes more and more forms as you all of you here, so committed to this practice that you would take 3 days of your precious lives to come and sit and investigate and find out for yourself. Maybe you can't find the embers yet, but that doesn't matter. They're here, and the world is alive with them. Here's Yangshan's awakening experience. Yangshan asks Guishan, what is the true abode of Buddha? This was after they'd already met and been practicing together, after Guishan recognized the extraordinary nature of Yangshan's, I want to say brilliance, but I think what I really mean is alignment with the way. The recognition that was beyond words. And yet here's the student Yangshan coming and saying, what is the true abode of Buddha? Where do the Buddhas live? Where is the place where I can go, maybe he was asking, to find the Buddha? And Guishan says something that I hesitated to read when I was looking this over earlier, but then I read it just before coming down to give the talk, and it inspired me all over again, or maybe for the first time I really heard a little bit what this ancestor of ours, Guishan, was trying to say to Yangshan. And so this is what he said. He said, think of the unfathomable mystery and return your thoughts to the inexhaustible, numinous light. And there it is again. The embers, just in a different metaphor. Always here. The Buddha nature is no place but here, and it's everywhere. Think of the unfathomable mystery and return your thoughts to the inexhaustible, numinous light. And then he goes on to say, when thoughts are exhausted, you've arrived at the source where true nature is revealed as eternally abiding. In that place, there's no difference between affairs and principle, and the true Buddha is manifested. No difference between affairs and principle. Sticking your hoe in the ground and putting your hoe over your shoulder and walking out to be a bodhisattva in the world, no difference. We make a difference. Oh, one is complete emptiness and one is complete awakened activity. But remember that in this school, they didn't make divisions like that. Already present, but not yet realized. Always here, but not yet felt. And yet felt perhaps below the level of consciousness, isn't it? Something pulls us. We often give it the name bodhicitta, the heart of awakening, the heart of the wisdom mind. Always active in us, breathing us, beating our hearts, making our blood flow and our cells divide. Not something we do, but something we are. This enlightened activity is constantly moving through us. And upon hearing those words, Yangshan had his great enlightenment. And then went on, of course, to have many, 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 many dialogues with Guishan, which keep showing up in our koan curriculum and in the koan curricula of many, many versions of Zen. According to the history, Linji Zen, what we now call Rinzai Zen, absorbed the Guiyang school. So many of the teachings of Guishan and Yangshan were absorbed into the Rinzai group, all these koans. All these stories, all these pointers. These people are now gone. They're dead. But are they really gone? I hope that they stay alive in your heart. Guishan asked Yangshan, where have you just come from? Yangshan said, from the field. Guishan said, how many people are in the field? Yangshan stuck his hoe in the ground, clasped his hands, and stood there. Guishan said, on South Mountain, there are a lot of people cutting reeds. Yangshan pulled his hoe from the ground and walked away. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable, and we'll make our little semicircle. And get as close as you can so we can, we want to all be able to see each other. Vix, can you move over a little bit? Towards Sabrina. All right, so time for our Dharma dialogue. Yes, Vix?
Yeah, so when you were kind of talking about, I guess one thing you said that helped me was, knowing something beyond the conscious level, or below the conscious level, rather. And I feel like I relate to that, especially when working with koans, and just kind of seeing the, in this, for this use, I guess, the inferiority of my thinking mind. I guess, does the knowing ever come, beyond, does it ever come to, the forefront and sort of permeate the conscious mind, or does it always sort of just, stay, below, moving?
Well, I think that's what the development is. It keeps coming forward and permeating more and more and more until it's pretty much always available. But it's not available when we first start out. That arising, at least that's been my experience. I think it might be yours too.
I mean, yeah. But, I think there's...
Oh, it's easy to forget, right?
A lot more.
Yeah. And that's normal too, right?
Yeah.
So not, it's important here not to have an expectation that that the mind that forgets goes away. It's the mind that forgets is the strongest mind of all, in a way. You know, it's prevented us from knowing all this stuff for all of our lives. So it's very hard to... We create a fantasy, I think. And we have to be careful about this. That someday, that'll be gone, and I'll just be enjoying every moment of my life in an awakened state. And it doesn't seem to be true of anyone I've ever met. So I think that movement in and out, the remembering, is important.
And Melissa, as I think you said earlier in the talk too, no end to this training, right? So there are moments of insight opening, but however far you are on the infinite path, right, it stretches out. So no arrival except in this moment. We can sometimes notice, maybe appreciate how the Dharma soaks into us a little bit deeper. And that is a wondrous thing whenever that happens, even a tiny bit. However deep it soaks in, not enough.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Yeah, Michael.
Really appreciate you several times, and just now you're saying remembering. Mm-hmm. Because as I've worked in this path and practice, initially it felt like a progression, like I was working towards something.
Right.
And then realized it's not. It's actually, as I'm going forward, or proceeding to go forward, there's a recollection, a remembering. It's almost childlike. There's a sense of this play, wonder, awe that comes back, that evokes memories as a child. And it's hard to explain. It's not, you're accumulating and you're remembering. I guess the word remember to pull together. But that's, I really appreciate that word.
Yeah. I mean, I think of it as a cyclical, you know, we keep touching into the same places over and over again. But, you know, I mean, actually connecting to what Bix was saying too, for me it's often right, which has that quality of remembering or recollecting. Mm-hmm. Oh, right, yep, this, forgot, now I remember. Yeah. And yet, not the same as when it happened before.
And I think sometimes we talk about this quality of coming home.
Mm-hmm.
What will you discover? Well, that your eyes are horizontal and your nose is vertical. And you might think, well, big deal. But when we come home, when we come back, when we remember, it is indeed a big deal. We were just busy looking elsewhere when all the time. it's been here. It's, as Melissa said, beating our heart all this time.
Yeah, Deb.
Thank you for the talk. What came up for me was that we're all here together, and in our sutra book, there's that line about how you're never guaranteed a day or a night. It's just like, I don't know, that just speaks to me that I'm just so glad that we're here together.
Yeah, and we've been here together the whole time, but sometimes we see it and realize, never again this moment, and the preciousness that is just this. Right? Yeah, so touching. Yeah,
thank you.
And it's a reminder, and we felt it, you know. We were all reminded by you that while we're here, while we're alive, let's really be alive. And this is, at the heart of the koan we've been doing together, just this vibrancy. This Guishan is, Yangshan is utterly alive, utterly there. I also want to point out that when the head monk lost in the other koan, you laughed because the Tenzo won, so.
Tenzo's good. And I've heard various renditions of what happened next, but one is that the head monk was so devastated that the head monk left and spent several years in a hermitage being bitter and angry. And that at a certain moment it flipped for him, and suddenly gratitude arose. Well, Guishan went to the mountain, and in one story there was no monastery there yet, and he sat by himself for 6 years at the base of the mountain until gradually the energy came around him. So many different stories.
Alternate histories.
Yeah,
one says there are already 500 people waiting for him.
Yeah,
maybe so that, take your pick.
That was the sales.
We got a great place for you. You're going to be a big shot.
Built in.
I love the image of him sitting there while they build around him.
Yeah, Anne.
When I first heard this koan, I found it frustrating because there's no detail. Mm-hmm. And I always go for the detail. And both your talks sort of went in different directions away from the koan. There's no detail. And it sometimes feels to me, especially with a shovel going into the earth, that it's like, it becomes this abstraction, it's it's emptiness. But it's not, it's a shovel going into the earth.
That's right.
And maybe it hit a rock and it had a hard time getting the shovel.
Yeah.
Maybe it was so wet and goofy. And that detail draws me in more than the 30-second insight. When Ellen said that they were building monasteries on mountains because of, all I could think of is, God, it's hard to grow rice on a mountain. I wonder if you terrace it. It's the detail that I love. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and then that is the teaching, that detail, right? Mm-hmm. The hoe in the ground. And the detail that we can't explain. So philosophically explaining what the hoe means and this and that. There's something much more immediate in that. That particular ground, and dreaming into, was it muddy, was it rocky, was it filled with worms, we don't know, but there he was, and here we are.
There's a bunch of poems attached to this koan traditionally in the commentaries, and I seem to recall, I don't have that particular book with me, there's a lot of stuff about his feet got muddy. Isn't that great?
David, thank you for the talk, Melissa. And actually, both of you were talking about this sort of flipping back and forth of like
you know, oh, the Tenzo got it, and the bitter head monk, and then the monk gets something, and, you know, goes to the mountain, and there's nothing there. There's something about that, I don't know, just evoked for me, like, mind states, you know, of, something, I've got something, and then, oh, I'm in La La Land, where's the mic? I don't know,
Oh, yeah. I mean, recorder.
Not to
recorder.
Focus on that, but just sort of back and forth. And I don't know. There's no happy ending really. Other than like I started this sesshin saying I feel like I'm coming home, you know, and. I guess that's what that is, just this sort of play back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can't possess any of this. No. You know, you can experience it. It can manifest in you, but you don't own it. Yeah. You don't possess it. I think that's an important reminder.
Mm-hmm. It manifests and then it flies away and then mm-hmm. something else lands and it's just, but it's not something that I get to hold.
But, yeah, well, it seems to fly away because it's like those coals, it's like those embers. Yeah. We fly away from it.
Well, and it's a little bit like what Anne was saying about the details. You know, I think the details keep changing. The essential nature doesn't change. Oh, it changes, but it changes because our perception of it keeps changing. Right? Everything's always in flux. Yeah. Yeah, Eugenia.
Thank you for your talk, Melinda. I was very touched because it seems like you, through your talk, made a perfect synthesis between the here and now and the beyond, both were mentioned. So, since our civilization seems to be so permeated by clash of opposites leading to the next stage and next stage and next stage, and I think through your talk it became very clear that the mud and the lotus can blossom even if there is mud there. So they both coexist.
Well, in fact, the lotus can't blossom without the mud, right? It's all included.
Yeah. But it's not first mud, then lotus. It's all together.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. All together. Beautiful. Thank you, Eugenie. Mm.
Sometimes we say, no mud, no lotus.
Sometimes it feels like all mud.
Yeah, well, that is coming home. You know, sometimes nobody else is at home, right? and there we are in the vastness of space, tumbling head over heels, then making our home there. Yeah, where we are.
Right. And just when someone invites us to look into the mud or into the home.
Yes.
And we find something we can see.
And there it is again, right? The ashes and the ember, the mud and something. Yeah. Yeah, beautiful. Anne, you keep putting your hand up. Anne, fine.
Well, I have a question that, okay, how do we know that he goes to cut reeds? Mm.
Oh, we don't.
I don't, yeah.
We don't know. We don't know what he's going to do next. Okay. Maybe he goes to the movies. Yeah, the Tang Dynasty version. Yeah, and tell, what's the importance for you when you say that? What's going on to make you notice that? What's the insight here?
Well, because I think maybe it was yesterday that we talked about, like, oh, he could, you know, change and he could go and maybe do something that was asked of him and change what he would. So, well, he still had agency perhaps to go away and not do what was asked. So
that's right. Yeah.
So that's all I just started to think about, because in the koan it doesn't say, you don't know where he goes. So that's just what I was thinking about.
Well, and it's one of those, of course, there's no end to the story. For each one of us, so we can tell a story about how we got here, but what are we going to do next? And I think this thing about agency is so important, because one of the shadow sides of any path is that you begin to think that someone else knows, and either you have to mm-hmm. obey or not obey, or but there is this, how do we follow? You know, sometimes, yeah, if our job is, you know, putting out the snacks, we put out the snacks. But this agency of any one of us could decide, yeah, it's a little, I'm not really wild about this Zen thing, I'm going home, right? But there is a choice that each one of us, moment after moment, chooses and ultimately has to rely on ourselves. I think, Melissa, you pointed that out too. It's not that the teacher is going to be able to even give you something. So this, yeah, we don't know what he went and did, but he did something. Right? And maybe that's the, doesn't matter. He'll get his hoe stuck in the ground again somewhere, or maybe not. Maybe enough of this gardening baloney. You know, I'm doing something else. We don't know.
Well, and you know, referring back to Hakuin again, the those who hear this truth even once, mm-hmm. right? There isn't. You don't have to follow the path. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many, I would say at this point, hundreds of people have been through Boundless Way and decided, you know what? No, I'm out of here. Sometimes on the very first night that they come to a sitting, sometimes after many years, and I think I used to have a delusion that once you were on the path, wow, this is great, the thing I've ever had. I'm going to keep doing this. It's not actually true for most people. Most people leave and go and do something else. We don't know what they do, but what Hakuin is reassuring us about is it doesn't matter what they do next. Right, the moment that was delineated in these little stories. Mm-hmm. That's what we get to have. Yeah.
I was not going to ask this, but then you both start talking about it. It seems to me, I've been stuck on what is a temporary fork in the road.
Oh, what he said.
A temporary fork in the road. This is about the ashes, right, or the embers.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
That is what Baijiang said to Guishan.
Oh, Baijiang, yeah. So, you know, you think to yourself, well, I mean, either it's a fork in the road or it isn't, but...
Oh, but it's a fork in the road right in this moment.
And, yeah.
This is the only fork you have right now. Right? And this will not be here tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I was thinking, right, yes, okay, right, that just because you do something... And then there's no more fork, right? You don't spend your time thinking, oh, you know, I should have done that other thing, or...
Yeah, none of us do that.
None of us.
No, I mean, you do, but it doesn't make any difference, right? Fork disappears as soon as you walk forward.
Well,
right?
Exactly. I once heard Robert Frost interviewed
when
he was older
about
the road less traveled. I think most of you know that poem. If you don't, you can look it up on the internet later. But two roads diverge, and I took the road less traveled. And he said... Everybody misunderstands that. it's once you take one fork, the other one disappears. Mm. There's no choice here. I just took that fork. And I just loved that. It was so revelatory to me.
Yeah.
Because so many of us are standing at the crossroads. Where do I go? Where do I go? And ultimately, it doesn't matter. Mm. You take your step and you do that.
I teach that poem. I love to teach it because it's got this surprise in it. Everybody, you know, you've seen it on posters, you've seen it everywhere. But when you actually sit down and really read all the way through, he says, they were the same, but I'm going to tell people, I chose the one less traveled by.
That's right.
That's made all the difference.
That's what he said in the interview.
Yeah, yeah.
Just read it more closely.
Yeah. So there's also that, like, oh, look at me.
Yeah. And we can say it's all forks.
Yes.
I think that's
every
what
moment.
You're saying. Every moment. It's not, I did this, and therefore, I may choose that. But each moment is this opportunity to, and it's not that we can know what we're doing, but we can align with something, we can follow, and we take a step. And sometimes what we learn is, yeah, that's not really the direction I want to go. And great, so you learned that. Congratulations. Right. And oh, yeah, this. I need to not to. All of this.
And there's a bit of sadness to me. This goes back somewhat, a poignancy maybe, to what Deb was saying. You know, so how many of us stand at that crossroads and don't enter our lives? We just keep going. We're stuck. You know, we're stuck. And we don't realize, of course, there's another way of looking at this. The stuck place is also it, right? There's no place you can avoid it. But that kind of thing of, you know, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And then our minds start creating all these narratives about, if I do that or if I do that. Most things, I think Sun San said this, Sun Sanim, most decisions are not decisions. They're arbitrary. Because, again, like Robert Frost, once you go down that road, you can tell people that you made the best choice, but you made the only choice you could make. And so Zen really prioritizes not hesitating, right? Living your life now. This is the way it is. It's going to be some other way in a heartbeat. But right now, this is the only choice we get, because we only have a morning and an evening. Yeah, maybe with that we'll end for today. Thank you.